outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Man, I noticed on the Zoom thing, I'm looking a little like Rudolph here. I got this red nose thing going on.
Where is the red nose thing coming from?
Oh, I had some precancerous stuff frozen off my face here a few months ago. I went back to see the guy for follow-up, and he decided to freeze a few more stuff. So I don't know how many of these sessions we're going to have, but fortunately, they're all precancerous. So we're just freezing my face, and it gets these red marks on it. And I was like, crazy.
I don't envy you. My family, we have invested a lot of money in dermatology freezing. Irish skin does not do well in the sun.
My Danish skin does not do well either. He asked me all the time, use sunscreen. I said, every time I'm outside, yes, I use sunscreen. But man, and I've hated the sun since I was a kid. So even like going to the beach, I would wear a windbreaker and a hat. And I would always stay covered up because there's nothing about laying in the sun and tanning that ever sounded like, what? I just,
no.
It's like, just cook yourself on the barbecue. If you're that way, I don't even understand it. And I live 25 miles from the beach, and I only go to walk the dogs, which is like twice a year. Sand, sun, salt. Three of my worst favorite things. So I know it drives people nuts. You're like, what, beach? I love going to the beach. I don't, man. I just don't. There's nothing about it that's fun.
Jess and I have kind of navigated a compromise when it comes to the beach, because she does like to lay out with her friends and read.
And how
a book
many beaches and, are there in Wyoming exactly?
Oh, this is when we were living in Southern California. So a whole lot of zero in Wyoming.
Yeah, that's what I think.
We are straight up landlocked. Our version of a beach is quite sad.
but yeah, a shoreline of a lake, maybe. Is that a beach?
There is. And we've got a couple spots that actually have some nice sand on the shoreline. And so
it's no salt. So you've only got two of the bad things, not three.
That's true.
Yeah.
Correct.
More manageable. Anyway.
But as long as there's a volleyball court where I can be playing sand volleyball and she can be hanging out with her friends, like I can do sand volleyball all day long. But just laying in the sun on a towel baking like a slow cooked chicken, not a chance.
Yeah, it's even the sand volleyball thing. When you get my age, that's the thing about getting older, man. Everything has a problem. Everything hurts. You know, your toes don't bend as well. And the sand, if I were in 10 seconds on the sand, man, I would be in pain. Yeah. As I say, growing old is not for sissies, man. It's a challenge every day just to keep the body moving forward. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And you're welcome back to the God Journey. Here we are yet again. Got a couple of fun emails here that I thought would be fun to read. They're just kind of, we don't read a lot of these because it's all kind of like, oh, aren't you and Kyle so great kind of stuff. But every now and again, it's nice to hear how people are impacted by what's going on here. This is from South Africa, Mariana. And for the past 10 years, I have found what I've been searching for most of my life, freedom, peace, and joy in a real relationship with Father. And that little voice deep in my soul that says, yes, 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 your words really sit well with my soul. This after having spent 20 years in church with a roller coaster ride of emotions and ill feelings that I was too scared to address. I'm so grateful that God led me to listen to your podcast. It has truly been a treasured teaching. I love when people find connection. And I always, you know, that happens because God's obviously stirred this stuff in your heart before we start talking about it. Yep. But us talking about it helps people lean into that space that they're kind of afraid to lean into because nobody else around them is leaning into that space. And they kind of get those screwy looks like you're kind of doing something wrong here, I'm sure. But it's too much fun. That Pharisee over your shoulder stuff, I think that's what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
And this from Darlene. Wahoo! For the past year, your podcast has been such a blessing to me. Knowing you guys are out there discovering what this life in him is like has helped me to see past all the religious garbage that was taught at a very early start in my belief system. So much of what I heard through church, quote unquote, didn't line up with what I was seeing in scripture myself. God is faithfully restoring me, and I am grateful to you all. Those are kind of fun.
Yeah.
So thanks to Mariana, and thanks to Darlene. Thanks for letting us know. I get a lot of those emails. I don't read many of them just because they're not the two, hey, look at us kind of thing. But it's fun to, I love the people I meet whose lives are being changed into a different journey.
I mean, for me, I've had several times where numerous times where I've been listening to a podcast and somebody actually put language to something that had been stirring in my heart for a while. And man, it's always a joy for me when I get to experience that. And, you know, to be a part of that dialogue for other people too, is such an encouragement and a blessing. It's just fun. I love getting to watch that ebb and flow.
Yeah, I do too. And it's really awesome to see the way that God kind of invites us into that reality. And I do think it's God. I think it's the Holy Spirit that guides us into all truth. So when people are like, your books changed my life, or podcast, I go, no, not really. Maybe I underline some things that God was already speaking to you. Because other people that read stuff or hear stuff that I say, they don't like it at all. So I know it's not the difference maker. I know it's the Spirit in us that invites us to life. And it's hard for us to see it all sometimes. So we kind of hear some things or have some sense of insight in our heart that Jesus is opening up, but it's so out of the pale from what we've been learned to trust in. Just like we talked about, you know, a couple weeks ago about our religious sensibilities, and, you know, it just seems crazy going down the road that God invites us on. But when somebody else underlines it for us, as I've had lovely men and women in my life who've been ahead of me on this journey who have underlined those things for me. So I think that's a great story, the way that happens. Best thing you heard this week?
I've got a few, but this one really resonated with me. And this was on a podcast that I was listening to, and it was talking about some of the things in our world climate right now. And the statement was, resentment has very little imagination for the future. Resentment has no interest in new creation. It is only trying to regain what was perceived to be lost.
Ouch. Yeah, that makes resentment seem regrettable.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, it really does.
But I think about that in the times where I have gotten stuck in resentment. And it's right, like that it was always looking back. It was always looking at a slight or something that I wanted to try to go back and reclaim instead of looking towards the future and saying, Lord, yeah, that hurt, you know, acknowledging the pain of that experience or the feeling of disconnect in that experience. But then saying, Lord, what are you doing now? You know, every time that I've got caught up looking into that, I miss the creative adventure that God has right in front of me for the day. And man, this podcast was talking about some of the geopolitical stuff that's going on and what's going on in Ukraine right now and looking at it through a sociological lens. And that just really, that hit home for me as I was listening to that this week.
I love that. I think it's so easy for us to get caught in the injustice of life in the world and to get angry at something that didn't go my way, the break on the job I was hoping to get, whatever. And then we get so stewing about what we missed out on that we don't get to see what's coming our way next, because God's got an infinite number of doors to open that takes us through stuff. One of the things that Sarah and I are reading, Brennan Manning's Wisdom of Tenderness. We were going to read Abba's Child, but I guess I'd given it away to somebody, so I couldn't find it on my shelf, so I grabbed Wisdom of Tenderness. And it was talking about the early Christians and some of the suffering they went through, and I love this line from it. It said, these Christians didn't enjoy the pain, but they were enriched by it. I thought, what a neat little flip on that, you know? When I help people deal with suffering, and if God's the agency of that suffering, very hard to get your heart and head around God in the midst of it. And this isn't saying that God caused the pain. It just says they didn't enjoy the pain they went through, but they were enriched by it. And that's a great way to look at the stuff that comes at our life. It's just, this is a chance to be enriched. No, it's not the way I'd prefer to go. Maybe not even the way God would have preferred things turn out. But now I'm here, and God has a way to go on, which is kind of 1 Peter 4, when he says, think of your sufferings as a weaning away from the sinful habit of always wanting to have your own way. And I think it's a great use for suffering. It's just life wasn't meant to go your way. It wasn't always going to unfold the way you wanted to. But man, if you can get your heart around, okay, that happened, and now I'm here. So God, what do you have for me that takes me on from here? Much better way to go than piling on all that resentment and just holding it for so long.
I was listening to one of the other podcasts I was listening to this week was by a Harvard psychologist that was doing some study work that you actually sent me. And part of that video, though, one of the things that she went into is the research behind trauma and how trauma in the human life is actually one of the primary catalysts for growth. That in the research, they have found that traumatic experiences is one of the most significant invitations to growth that a human can experience. It's whether or not they choose to see it as that invitation, to experience it, to work through that, and then to move into something deeper. And man, I was really intrigued by that, thinking about the challenges that we face and whether you get bogged down in resentment and looking back at what was lost or how did I get slighted and I'm going to stay back there and live back in that versus, okay, that wasn't ideal. Like you said, like that's not exactly what I wanted to do, but it added texture and enrichment to my life and I'm going to move forward, that it doesn't have the final signature on who I'm going to be.
That's wonderful. I think that's so, which doesn't mean, hey, let's all go out and look for trauma so we can suffer and grow. Never that. But I tell you, the people I know who suffered severe kinds of trauma, particularly at very young ages of abuse or whatever, and see them on the other side of God, there could be 20, 30 years of deep psychological pain, hurt, destructive behaviors in their life, whatever. Yeah. When they find themselves on a better track of God's grace in the midst of it and God's healing of it, the depth those people have is extraordinary. Yeah. Because they've really gone through some stuff and found God beyond it and healed from it. So I like that. They didn't enjoy their pain. They were enriched by it. And
yeah.
I can say that of the stuff in my life too, though I wouldn't say I've suffered anything close to what I would put in the chart of trauma. I've suffered some relational pains and things like that. But man, I tell you, they just, if you let God keep working, they just take you deeper. They just unpeel the onion and let you see what's God really has in mind for us. But the best thing I heard this week was on a podcast. It was this, a love I can't come back from. I think you said that last time we were, about 2 weeks ago now, probably, because that was only a week ago for us. But
yeah,
man, that sentence has just lived on in my heart. To me, that is the essence of the journey, a love I can't come back from. And almost, I think the way you said it, at least the way I heard it when we were talking a couple of weeks ago was, you know, it's like, oh, crud, God, why'd you do this? It's like, now I've experienced something that marks me, that I can't just turn around from. And that's what Gene Edwards used to say about, if you've ever tasted real Christian community, you can't ever be satisfied again with just human methodologies of doing home groups or doing whatever that's supposed to be life-giving. Once you've been tainted by a real feeling of community with God or with other people, then that's what your heart longs for. And the fake stuff just doesn't address anything in your heart.
It doesn't. And I think back too on the comment that like C.S. Lewis made about the divine collision, where the love of the kingdom collides with our life in such a way that no matter where we go, we will never be the same again.
Yeah.
No matter which route we go, no matter how we try to live out the life, we can never go back.
A love I can't come back from, though. That's my prayer for every person now. I want you to know a love you can't come back from. And I there's so much we've put to the quote unquote Christian experience that is about believing certain things, convincing ourselves of certain things, trying hard to do things, and it's things. And it's not him. It's not him that becomes a transforming thing. I got an email this weekend and it kind of expressed something of what I've been seeing a lot lately in just a lot of conversations. There's a difference between somebody who has been enlivened by this love, presence, whatever, that they see Jesus as someone they're really walking with.
Yeah.
And people who are still trying to figure that out. And this is what I said. I have a lot of information in my head about God, some true and right, and a lot that isn't. But the subject of love seems to be a stumbling block for me at the moment. I can see and do understand the love given to us or shown to us. But we are taught God is love and all the ways that he has shown or does show this love. We are taught that to choose God rather than ourselves will lead us to a wonderful, fulfilled life now and in eternity. Going by the messages I have received, that those messages say to me is that it's all about us, all ending up with God in eternity. And I know we've postulated salvation that way, but I've heard this in a couple of things lately where people think love is selfish. Like if God loves us, then the whole universe is for us, not for him. And yet love is, if God is love, his desire to love is about us, but not about necessarily me particularly having everything in my life that makes me fulfilled. That's not the end of that. So he said, I do think his ways are intended to draw us to him. I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have drawn you with unfailing kindness. Jeremiah 31:3, he quotes. This is the point I want to get to. But as an example, in a devotion this morning talking about who is God, it said, he pursues you daily with his love. I feel like a more accurate wording may be, his love pursues you daily. I feel that would give a more accurate picture of the love spoken in the Jeremiah passage. And what caught me when I was reading that was, you're going from God pursuing you to God's love pursuing me. And I've just depersonalized the gospel just a quarter turn. Just enough to go, it really isn't about God loving me. It's about an amorphous love in the universe that's pursuing me. And it amazes me how so many people seem to want to depersonalize this faith. Even when we talk about the conversation on Saturday with some people that are going through Galatians 4 together, and or Galatians 5, actually, this last Saturday, and we worked through the whole book. But the point was the word faith, because I was asking them, the only thing that counts is faith expressing itself in love. That's Galatians 5, 7. Yeah. So if that's the only thing that counts, what is it? And it was amazing how long it took them to wrestle through what faith is, because we call Christianity the faith. We call our Christian life the faith. We've depersonalized it. It's not trust in Jesus who's walking alongside me. It's the faith, the set of doctrines and practices and rituals and ethics that I wrap my life around. That is the Christian faith. And if I do those things, I'm part of the faith. And if I don't do those things, I've lost my faith, or I've lost the faith, or I've backslidden from the faith. And I just have been very aware in the last couple of months, really, how often people who don't really know God yet internally kind of put things there instead, and they depersonalize. They want to take God kind of out of it. And I wonder if it's a defense mechanism. You know, I don't know God making himself known to me, and I get nervous when other people are talking about that. And if we just talk about a love that pursues me, then I don't have to think about the personal side of that I feel like I'm lacking. And I get why that defense mechanism might kick in if that's what's going on. But the other side of that is, if there is a personalized experience here that God wants to have for us, rather than depersonalizing it so I don't have to feel bad about that, I would rather pursue it. What does that mean? Why am I missing something? If this is meant to be a him and not an it, why am I missing it?
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I feel like I've been having quite a few conversations just in the last 4 or 5 days that revolve around that as well. With a couple of individuals, one individual I was talking with, and they had gotten really burned by a institutional gathering that they were a part of. And they were talking about how even untangling the character and the identity of God from the language of God, that even the name Jesus for this individual had some really negative connotations because of what they'd experienced through an institutional setting. And largely through some betrayal of some very close relationships. And then I had another conversation with an individual who had spent a lot of time pursuing full-time ministry, pastoralship, etc. And I asked them, what is the good news for you? Like when you say what is the, like when you're talking about the good news, what is that? Because if it's just Jesus came and died on the cross so that you got to get out of hell free card, I don't know. That doesn't sound like, that seems a little flat to me. If that's the good news, if it's literally life altering, I can't come back from message, that doesn't seem like it resonates. And there was just this. I think you're onto something, Wayne, in regards to a safety mechanism, because both of the people who that I was having real intimate conversations about this with, they had experienced a lot of pain. And so to disconnect their idea of love or their idea of who Jesus is or who their idea of Father was or is, their experience of what they had thought that was so painful that they felt like they had to disconnect from it. that they couldn't resonate with it. It couldn't be that close to them, because if it was that close, it could hurt them really badly again.
I guess it's got to be an incredibly frustrating thing to hear other people talk about this connection with a real presence. Feel like you've been after it most of your life, but don't feel like you've had it. Is that my fault? Have I done something wrong? Is that God's fault that I'm kind of outside the pale of those that he does this with? Is it just, Wayne and Kyle are unique people, so they get an experience? I mean, I remember even as a child having moments where I knew I wasn't alone in the universe, and that there was a presence, even when I was taught that presence was something other than I discovered him to be. Even when that was, a scary legalistic, yes, it's just you're a horrible person, you're going to hell, but he's offered to save you, jump through these hoops, be saved, and then, I'm good. I'm that's good news. If I'm going to be burned in a fire forever, and now I'm not going to be burned in a fire forever, that's good news. But it didn't lead to the enduring friendship that my heart really craved. And I had these moments of tasting it, and I never stopped leaning into that. And I've had gaps of months and years where it's just like, that's not very fresh and not very real. But my heart never stopped looking. Even when I got, some of the teenage years where your hormones and affections and things you think about have little to do with God at times, or even when you're begging God to change you so you don't have to go through the stuff you're going through. But even then, there was never a time I lost that. Man, God, there's something real here, and I've tasted it. That love you can't come back from. I've tasted it. Dang it. And even though it's a struggle right now, and even though I can't see it, but if you've never had even the taste of it, which I would say is impossible, I would say never recognize the taste you got, because you look. That's what I think is more the problem for people. It's not that God's withholding, and it's not that you're so horrible he can't get through to you. It's that somehow you've been taught, culturated to look for something different than it is. So you're laying on your pillow at night looking for a voice or the stars to rearrange themselves and an email message to you from God or whatever you're looking for. And I feel for those people. It's got to be very frustrating to feel like there's this personal attachment to faith that I've lost, that I never found or never connected with. And so I'm trying hard, man. I'm reading the stuff and I'm doing the stuff that's asking me. I'm studying deeply. And I got this, like you said, I have a lot of information in my head, but the heart's crying out for that experience, which I think is great. I think the heart ought to keep crying out for that experience, and which is not just feelings. It's not just feeling God's love. I know people kind of, that's the other thing from the intellectual side. And it's not. It's the way our awareness of God grows in our heart. And it's not necessarily feeling loved or feeling great about things. It can be even in the midst of very horrible things, but I'm not alone in them. And I've got a God who's with me. And that presence and sense of presence is so important to this journey. Otherwise, we're just giving people principles to live by.
I had an interesting conversation with a person a while back, and we were talking about relationship and relationship with God versus relationship with people. And this individual really had a lot of stuff that was tied up with who God is. And there was a lot of head knowledge there, right? There was a lot of that head knowledge that was there. And there was a real, came from a pretty conservative background. So there was a very, very strong adherence to scripture. And that's the only way that God communicates. That's what he left us. And we were just talking, and I was like, so, If you wanted to date someone and you really wanted to get to know them, and that person, that super attractive person that you really, really wanted to get to know, said, okay, you've got two options. Option number one, here's my journal. You can never interact with me in person, but here's my journal, versus here's an opportunity to do life alongside of me, to get to know what I love, to get to know what I don't love, like to encounter life with me. Which one would you choose? And they just fell apart because all their life they had been told that the only thing that they had, the only way they could do relationship was taking the journal. And that was it. That was the only type of interaction and an encounter of intimacy that they were going to be able to have.
And maybe that's a problem. We have so overemphasized doctrine, which is not to say doctrine's wrong or bad. No. Things true about God are great to know things that are true about God. But to know things that are true about God and knowing God as an unfolding presence in my life are two very different things. And I'm going to choose the person all the time. Here's a free book from Wayne Jacobson. You can read. I'll send you a free copy if he loves me and you can read it. Or I'll come out and you and I'll go for a 4-hour drive and talk. What would you rather do? Yep, I'd rather the drive by far. Yes. But we've so focused on the doctrine of these things that I think people lost the person behind it.
What was it about the Bible that became a viable substitute for experiential relationship with the heart of the Father? How did that become a viable substitute to relationship?
My guess would be it was controllable. Hmm. The book's controllable, right? You can interpret the book, and yeah, it's going to say some things you don't like that you can't ignore, but it's also going to have things in it, you like the Pharisees did. You can twist this all up so it serves you well.
Yeah.
And I think when we went from people walking with Jesus to churches and institutions and bishops and then structure behind all that, I think it became important to have a more controlled message. And the thing about relationships is it's wild. You don't control it. You don't. And God, he couldn't put all that he is into the best book. I mean, you can read the book. You can know the book well and misunderstand who God is. And I think that's what a lot of scholars haven't worked through yet, or pastors. They take an academic approach to God. I know. I've heard them tell me about it. They can teach about God on Sunday morning, but they'll look me in the eye and say, I don't know him.
Yeah.
Well, it's easy. It's easy to talk about God. A lot of great books. You can, A.W. Tozer talks about, the knowledge of the holy, and you can read all this systematic theology stuff that's true about God and be deeply touched by the truth of that, and yet miss the knowing of him. And even I was with a group not long ago that were talking about the grace message. They wanted to hang out with me, and they were really nuts about the grace message, which is a fine message, I guess. And I got with them and I was surprised by the conversation, because all the energy was about the teaching of grace and growing in grace. And there wasn't a hymn behind. It wasn't that grace opened the door to Jesus. It was grace. Yeah. And they may just be on the road to that. So I'm not condemning them, or, if someone might be listening to this going, he's talking about us. I had a young man with me, and after we were done, we were driving, the next day we went for a walk, and I just said, hey, let's talk about last night a little bit. I said, what did you hear last night? So he was telling me some of the stuff he heard, and I said, let's do like a word cloud. You know those word cloud things where you take a document or whatever, and you kind of process what's the main theme of this? So I said, what's the main theme of that? And everything we came up with was grace or message. And there was a real litmus test kind of thing, like people who don't understand the message. It was a real looking down at the bondage of that whole thing. And they'd recently come out of congregations that were very controlling, and they'd been, they were hurt there, and they've been hurt by people who judge them now that they're not there. So I get all of those dynamics. I've lived through those things. But I said, in this word cloud, I don't think Jesus even shows up on the cloud, not even as a little letter. Because that's what I was looking for all night. What we're talking about grace as a depersonalized reality rather than a doorway into the knowing of him. The grace allows us access to him. And his eyes were just, he goes, oh my gosh, I noticed. Yes, I see that now. He just like, because it was so, not just, I'm not trying to diss the group of guys getting together at all. We had a fabulous conversation. But I felt like during the time it was going on, and then as we processed it afterwards, it was just depersonalized. They were more excited about grace than they were aware of how Jesus was leading, shaping, working in them in the moment. And I noticed it even in the countenances, because people I'm with who have even the slightest touch of Jesus and life and whatever, there's a different way they look. There's a countenance factor. And people who even believe great stuff, but they're on a message and they're on something to defend. It's like there's this, and in the conversation with this group of guys, something would be said and immediately there's this pushback to adjust it to the message more. And it was like, wow, we're not even, we've depersonalized grace, which is, To me, no grace at all. That's where Paul ends up in Galatians. You've traded the gospel for what is no gospel at all. You've got the right words. You've got the right theology. And you can look and say, yeah, that's right. And that's legalism. Great. But it didn't acquaint you with a Jesus worth knowing, with the love that you can't come back from. And I did. Yeah. And maybe that's a step in the journey. So rah, rah, rah. Yeah, you're on the journey. But don't camp out with the message of grace. Just don't camp out there. Just keep moving. Because down the road is how Jesus wants to open his life to you. And so that he becomes a partner in your journey. Not somebody who wrote you a journal. You're supposed to look over and figure out what to do next.
When I think about that, Wayne, and I think about the people that I know and the journeys that they're on, it's interesting at times where any of us get stuck, right? Like, I guess even for myself, like I had a really interesting revelation today. I was talking with a client and was just talking a little bit about my journey and realized that I'm closing in on 20 years of actually walking in this reality with him, which like kind of baffled me because I thought, you know, like I was 19 when I first encountered the love that I can't come back from and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm like, oh man, I'm actually getting like, that was longer ago than I thought it was. I have been like, and yet like, you know, thinking about the areas that I still get stuck and where, you know, for example, like the finances thing and learning to trust him in the finances, like it's taken 17 years of relational collateral to really start learning how to live in that in a free and in a wholehearted way. And there was so much before that I needed to have God lay down that relational foundation and have multiple invitations, right? To step into that reality before I actually trusted them enough to step into that. And I, you know, I just think about that and man, I don't know where, I honestly don't really know where I'm going with that other than just to think about that and to reflect on it of just, man, like what is it that causes us to pause in some of those places, like a grace-based message. And I, you know, you've got a group that's coming out of a very dominating religious controlling environment and maybe, yeah. Maybe they need to camp on grace for 3 years because that's, you know, that's how long it's going to take for God to create enough relational collateral with them, experiential relational collateral with them that they can actually let it go and say, okay, you know, that, I don't know. Have you ever heard of Giving Keys? Have you heard of this concept before?
I don't think so.
So they're a company out of in Los Angeles that employs homeless individuals who are trying to transition out of homelessness. Super cool idea. But anyway, the whole concept is they recycle these keys and they stamp words on them that are very meaningful to you in that moment. And so it could be like courage, it could be authenticity, whatever. And the whole heart behind it is wear it until you feel like you're living at a deeper level of freedom in that. And there's somebody else in your life that needs that message more than you do. That needs to be gifted that reminder, that encouragement more than you do. And it's intriguing. Like I think about that as we're talking about that just comes to mind. And it's like, okay, Lord, what is my giving key right now? You know, what is the word or what is the relational reality that I'm wearing right now that eventually I'll be able to give to somebody else. Eventually there'll be somebody else in my life that I can pass that on to and say, okay, I've started to live in this more consistently. I don't know. I'm going to have to hold that one in front of God for a little bit. That's an intriguing question.
I think anything that allows us to hold what's true until it becomes true in our heart is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think the old way of teaching, I mean, just imagine how we used to do sermons in churches. You know, I'd stand up there and I'd teach something like we're talking about anger or giving or generosity or outreach or whatever. Whatever we can manipulate the passage to say that will benefit our congregation. And then we give, you know, an application for how we should do this. And so we keep leaving people with the idea of, I heard something and I can do something. And then I've fulfilled that. And we've left the whole thing about, no, let me hold something that's true until God wins me into the reality of it so that I can actually live it. And I think this relational thing we're talking about is one of those things. If I'm just doing stuff because I'm feeding this absence in my life for my spiritual hunger, that's going to leave me on a series of drinking from the wrong cistern kind of stuff. It just is. Yeah. I'm going to be doing all kinds of supposedly good stuff and biblical stuff, but it's not feeding the hunger thing. Or I'm going to realize this takes a significant amount of time. I mean, a lot of emails we read on here that are 10 years of this, 20 years of that. I know this journey takes a while for the realities to find a home in our heart.
Yeah.
It's one thing to recognize what's true and wave a banner about that. That's true that, you know, if you think institutions are bad or all the ways that my things I've shared have been simplified into something that kind of makes my yuck meter go off. I've never said all institutions are bad or all structures bad, but I know like it's associated with me. What I'm saying is there's something more real in the heart that takes you on a different journey, and fellowship becomes to mean something different. It's not just I sat in the same room with you on Sunday morning or we talked about the weather, or our kids' Little League game or whatever. There's a journey in Christ where I'm holding stuff that I think Jesus might be saying to me, but I'm not even sure it's him yet. Not even sure it's scriptural. So I'm still want to ponder and hold. And I've got brothers and sisters that hold that with me as we're looking to, hey, what does God have in mind? There's such a dynamic of beauty in that, that's not the same as somebody who's just taking a situation and parsing it out doctrinally to find some act that you need to do to make it different. And I know when we were going through Galatians with this group, one thing we talked about is how long between the road to Damascus and Paul going out and teaching at Antioch. And most people think, well, it's probably, you know, a few months later, we got this testimony, let's get it in church. And, you know, it was 17 years before Paul did anything. It's 30 years of Jesus growing up in Nazareth and doing whatever before our penchant for this ought to be quick. This ought to be, you know, I ought to get this right. I read he loves me. I should be different tomorrow. No, just take a deep breath. This is something that God, the realities of living relationally inside of him is something that seeps into a heart over time, over significant time. And you can't rush it. You can only delay it. You can do stuff on your own that, I've delayed it much in my life. I wish I could get a do-over in the first 42 years. But I don't know that I would know what I know now if I hadn't had those 42 years of doing it all on my own and trying hard for God and having moments of tasting his beauty and goodness. In fact, there's a podcast I did in September for a group called The Urban Mystic. It just aired last Friday. I don't know where it's been holding it. When I got done with that podcast, I just blogged on it today in case people wanted to listen to it. It was 90 minutes of two brothers from South Africa, the ones living in the Netherlands now, drilling down on Wayne's spiritual journey. And they were asking great questions about how did God make himself known there? And what was the deterrence here? And how did you find that trailhead there? And I loved that conversation. I remember sitting here after we were done going, I can't wait to make that available to people. And then I've been waiting for 5 months, almost six now, going, what did they do with that thing? I guess it was a bad interview and they just threw it out or whatever. And I never got time to write them to say, and then I got an email that said, we just posted. And I went, whoa. And I listened to a little bit of on my walk this morning. Was it as good as I remembered? Was that a good conversation? And it was a good conversation, not because I'm special. It was the questions they asked. Because when I'm on a podcast, I let other people control where we're going. I don't try to control it. Take it where you want. And they kept asking the questions that challenged me to keep, okay, now if I peeled off a layer of that, what was going on in my heart underneath that? And It's as good an expression of this journey and how long it takes as God kind of gets us to the end of ourselves. And then we kind of learn to lean into the reality that is reality, even though we got detractors around us saying, no, you can't do that. And it is a long journey. So you have 20 years of you're living in this journey and only God's unpacking a certain aspect of it now. Well, I agree. I think the aspect he's unpacking now is about a 20-year prep time to get even close to being able to ask those questions. And God knows that better than we do. That's what I love. God knows that better than we do. And if we could just let this take time and let the reality of presence become more important than figuring out all the logical doctrinal mind. In fact, I wrote this guy back. I said, seems to me still you're trying to get to God through logic. And I understand why, because we've been taught that and all the big theologians from times past. But your heart's crying out for something that's different. And you can't quiet the heart by saying, oh, let's depersonalize the offer so the heart is satisfied. The heart won't be satisfied.
No.
Because you can't take the Christ out of Christianity. You can't take Jesus out of, and I know we haven't taught people how to walk with Jesus. I know that. So we've got to punt, kick back and say, okay, let's think about this differently so people actually can learn how to follow him and know him.
Yeah, I think that's a great, like, honestly, Wayne, I think that's a great place to end this one, because my mind is going now like crazy to restoring innocence. Like I, there's a story that I want to bring to your attention that I want to just on the heels of this continue to process.
Okay. We can end it there.
Okay. Because I've got a bunch of, like, I've got some notes here that I really want to dive into on that, right on that line.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.